Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
We need people who are well-educated enough to know what the Constitution means, what it says, how its principles work.
Dr. Robert George of Princeton University talking about his presentation on the Constitution and civic virtue at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We need people who are willing to fight for those principles, to call out politicians, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Democratic or Republican, when they transgress against the Constitution. We need a people who are fit for liberty and fit for the rule of law under a Constitution like ours, a Republican polity like ours, established under the Constitution. So I'm really going to be talking about civic virtue and its relationship to constitutional structures and principles.
You can meet and hear Dr. Robert George at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. I was saddened to see an announcement from the Food and Drug Administration saying that it had taken a decision to allow women to receive abortion drugs without appearing in person. Why are these drugs dangerous? Why should they not be on the market at all, much less being dispensed essentially over the internet by doctors who have no actual contact with the women who will take them and potentially be harmed by them? As a piece of good news, maybe the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act will get a second chance. We'll see. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Carol Tobias joins us to talk about these two issues. She is president of National Right to Life. Carol, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. It's great to be back.
Let's start out talking about the mifepristone decision by the FDA. Why should this drug not be on the market at all?
This was a really disappointing decision from the FDA, but I have to admit it wasn't totally unexpected. RU486, the chemical abortion drug, which medically is known as mifepristone, is dangerous. It can cause incomplete or failed abortions. A woman taking it can get an infection. She can do, hemorrhage severely so that she ends up in the emergency room. We know that at least 24 women have died after using this pill. It's just not safe, and the FDA has decided they are going to lift, at least for the duration of the pandemic, the few limits that they actually did have in place on how this can be used.
Give us a little history on how the FDA has kind of turn by turn mishandled the process on mifepristone.
Well, the FDA approved RU486 for use in the United States in 2000. In 2007, Congress gave the FDA the authority to place what they called REMS, Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy, on certain drugs that were known to be dangerous, but still they thought had some good enough effect that they were going to be legal. They just had to be watched and taken care of in very, careful circumstances. Not a lot of drugs get put on this list of requiring the REMS, but the FDA said that mifepristone was one of them that needed to be on this list because there were so many dangers associated with the drug. The regulations required that a prescribing doctor had to be aware of all the risks and be prepared to handle any complications that arise, and that this abortionist slash doctor, whatever you want to call him, had to meet with the woman in person. So the FDA has decided now, in the case of the pandemic, it's more dangerous probably for a woman to meet with the people in person. So they are lifting these restrictions, these regulations, and saying that they can meet online, they can have a Zoom chat, and then the pills can be sent to her in the mail. So she is largely performing a do-it-yourself abortion at home. This is extremely dangerous, and I believe strongly proves that the abortion industry and now the Biden administration does not care about the health and safety and well-being of pregnant women.
The irony here is, of course, that with regard to one of the vaccines for COVID, the FDA and the president have moved very quickly to try and ensure the safety of people when there have been complications from the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Why not similar concern over larger numbers and a more dangerous drug for women?
The only thing I can think of is that the abortion industry and this administration has become bloodthirsty. They absolutely believe that the only fair, open democracy has to be one that allows you to kill babies. And they are doing absolutely everything they can to make abortions accessible, affordable, of course, because of our tax dollars, just trying to promote abortion in any and every way. It's baffling unless you truly believe in spiritual warfare.
My concern is that the lifting of these restrictions won't be only for the time of the pandemic, but as the time pandemic draws to a close, God willing, that they would remain lifted. What are your thoughts?
I do not believe these limits will be put back into place. Women who take the mifepristone at home, the purpose of it is to basically starve the unborn child. It dries up the progesterone in the uterus so that the baby starves to death. And then she is supposed to take a second pill, a couple days later, and that pill will cause cramping in the uterus so that she expels the dead baby. Well, what if the baby is not expelled, or it's an incomplete or failed abortion? She develops severe infection. She can be hemorrhaging. Because it affects the uterus and cramping, if she has an ectopic pregnancy, the baby is developing in the fallopian tube, not in the uterus. So this pill does not affect someone who has, it does not affect the baby in an ectopic pregnancy. There are so many ways that this pill can cause physical harm to the woman. And yet, I don't think that's going to make any difference. I truly believe that once they say this pandemic is over, they're going to say that they had so much great results and, such success with these new limits or no limits, they're just not going to put them back on.
Let's talk a little bit about the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. What is a discharge petition, and does it give this act a second chance or a third chance or a fourth chance?
A discharge petition in the House of Representatives says they have enough votes and they need a majority, 218, because there's 435 members of the House. So they need a majority to sign a petition saying we want to vote on this bill. Right now, the pro-life members of Congress have introduced this Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. If a baby survives the abortion and is born alive, that baby has to be treated in the same manner and receive the same kind of care any other baby born at that same gestational age would receive in other circumstance, a baby born prematurely. But Nancy Pelosi will not bring this bill to the floor for a vote. So the Republicans are trying an effort to get as many members to sign on as possible. There are still some special elections out there, so we currently only have 430 members in the House, but it does need 218. We fully expect every Republican to sign on. If we win one of those special elections, it would be 213 members, but we need 218. So we need five Democrats to sign on to say they think this bill should come to the floor for a vote. So I would encourage all your listeners, if they have a Democratic member of Congress, doesn't matter if they are pro-life or pro-abortion, they need to hear from you. Ask them to sign the discharge petition so that the Born Alive bill can come to the floor for a vote.
With about 30 seconds here, Carol, even if it loses in an actual vote, would it politically require those who are in favor of abortion to come out and flatly vote that they don't want children to survive an abortion, if at all?
Yes. If we could get 218 members to sign this discharge petition, the bill would come to the floor for a vote. And then, it could still lose, I guess, if someone would happen to change their mind, even though they signed this petition. But yes, if they have to vote on this bill, they would be telling us whether or not they think babies who survived the abortion are members of the human family, born alive, and deserve protection. And I think that's an issue that so scares the abortion industry, and quite frankly, at least in Washington, the entire Democratic Party. They do not want this to come to the floor for a vote. They do not want to take a stand on this issue because they know they are in a very small minority in this country who think these babies should still be killed even after they have survived the abortion and have been born alive.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life. You'll find a link to National Right to Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Carol, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be with us when we come back from this break. It'll be part six of our series, What I Wish My Non-Lutheran Family Members Knew, today about the Lord's Prayer.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season, LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a devotional resource for middle school and high school teens titled Words of Strength and Promises. Topics include addiction, anxiety, being Christian, peer pressure, sexuality, and more. Learn more about Words of Strength and Promises at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A great confirmation and graduation gift, Words of Strength and Promises, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
This is a message for pastors and lay leaders of Missouri Synod congregations. As we're now rounding a corner on a year of COVID lockdown and measures, how has that affected your attendance and giving? In 25% of our churches, giving has actually gone up. Surprised? Why are some churches struggling while others are thriving? Here at LCMS Stewardship and the whole Office of National Mission Team, we have answers and we have help for you and your church today. LCMS.org/stewardship.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is it hard? Yes. Will it challenge you? Absolutely. Is it a blessing from God for you and those you will serve? Without question.
Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
The pastoral ministry is all of these things, and that's why Concordia Theological Seminary exists, to form servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Men from all over the world with a variety of unique backgrounds come to our campus to receive faithful training that will equip them for the challenging but blessed work of serving as pastors in Christ's church.
Learn more about studying for the vocation of pastor at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Christ-centered worship, confessional theology, Lutheran community, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.